And welcome back to Dr. Drill's Making Motivation podcast, where it is our mission in life to honor interesting and authentic people, to tell their stories, and to inform the listener, to make you think, to put smiles on faces and a little fire under the asses of the masses. Today is Sunday, April 14th, 2024, and I am making motivation with my good friend Gar Webb. And the title of our podcast is Hospice and Healing. How you doing, Gar?
I'm great. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing awesome, my friend. It's a beautiful day outside, and I'm happy to be speaking with a good friend. And I think this is a very important topic that we have breached on the adjustment table a few times. I want you to know that straight off out of the chute here, I appreciate you. And I love you, and I enjoy our conversations. And so I think that the listener is going to take this all in and come away with some positive things and also enjoy your conversation. So a little context for the viewer. All right, Gar Webb and his wife, Deb, are very good friends of mine. They're patients under my care. Gar is going to tell the story about his mother. And you're an only child, am I right, Gar?
I am, yes.
Only child. So in 2020, Gar's mother was 89 years of age and had a hip fracture, and he was needed. And so between...
And a hip replacement.
Hip replacement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clearly, your presence was needed for your mom. She lives in South Carolina, and you're here in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So tell us the entire... Well, let me finish my context here. I've long associated Gar with the phrase service above self. Gar was a Rotarian. So he was always talking about the missions that he was on that were going to help the community and other people, and just a generally good dude who's always looking to lend a hand and a smile and a kind word. And so, that was always my thing. Service above self. He'd say something, "Hey, I'm going to do this now." And I'd be like, service above self, Gar Webb. You know, he's looking out for everybody else. It's wonderful way to be. So it's unsurprising to me that a son cared for his mother, as he's going to describe the hospice experience. He took care of her at the end of her life, just as she was with him at the beginning of his own. Take it away, Gar.
So just to start this off, as you and I have talked about in the past, I love these podcasts you're doing because in them there are nuggets that people can take and apply to life and do something a little bit better for themselves, their family, whomever. So let's see if we can pick up some nuggets here. One of the things that I enjoy being around you is you're part of my team. And when I mean my team, my team of friends, my team of family, my team to better my life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And not everybody does that, but there's parts of the team that have each part of that. So that's the nuggets that we're going to be kind of talking about today, if that's okay.
That sounds awesome, my friend.
So mom was very active. They retired to Hilton Head, South Carolina in 1985, mom and dad did. And the funny story there is dad retired from working for 33 years with Sun Oil Company. And they said, "Hey, Jack, it's time. The package will never be better." And that was back when you worked for a company your whole life. And they give you packages.
Nice.
Take the package and go. And he said, "Okay." And he was 58 at the time, I believe. And they went around and they found this house in South Carolina. And I never knew this, but mom always bought the real estate and had done very well in the moves that we had made with the company. We had four different moves, and she always bought low and sold high, fixed the house up just right. Phenomenal. So that was part of their teamwork. And in November of 1985, Dad called me into his little office that we had at the house, and he said, "Hey, I want you to know something. Mom and I are retiring. We found this house in Hilton Head. We love it. And you're not invited. Go find some place to live." And I was finishing up college at Trenton State College at the time. And I said, okay. So I went and found myself an apartment and did the thing. They moved down there and just had the time of their lives. They traveled a little bit. They went to Hawaii. They went to Paris, France. And as I'm going through the picture books, Mom arranged the photographs in what stage of life we were. So when we lived in Washington, D.C., she had that book full of pictures. When we lived in Greensboro, North Carolina, she had that book of pictures. When we lived in Michigan, she had that book. In New Hope, that book. And then in South Carolina, she had a whole different book of pictures. So I have five different photo albums just looking at the fun that they had and their, not knowing at the time, but I called it their team of friends and family. And it was just phenomenal, phenomenal. So Dad passed in 2005, and I thought Mom was going to have some issues, but Mom came from a banking background. She worked as a head teller at a bank before they got married. She had all the finances straightened out in a day. She had everything ready to go, and I was there for moral support. So Mom said, "Look, you and Dad, you've got to go back to your lives," because we had our own company then. We had our own mortgage bank at the time. And she said, "You've got to go and do your thing. I'm fine. Trust me. I'm not going to be lonely. I've got all kinds of friends. I got a lot of things to do. I'm very active at church. I'm very active." Okay. And she got called every single week. She got called two or three times a week. That's just the way it was. Deb's parents passed, and there were some lessons learned. Her father passed in 2005 also. And then her mom passed in like 2012, I think it was. And we learned some lessons from both of those. So we get into Mom's part, and Mom's health started going a little bit. Now, as part of her life, she finally sat down and bought the hot rod of her life. It was a red Mercedes two-door coupe with white seats and black carpet. Everybody knew when Mom was on the road. And it was Mom's hot rod, and she just smiled driving that car. Now, she was a little old lady in Hilton Head, South Carolina, but she was having a ball, and that's all that mattered. Whenever hurricane came in, the friends all gathered up together and got in a caravan, and off they went to Atlanta. And when Matthew came through, that was a hurricane five. There was a lot of damage, but where her house was, no problems. So it was just a matter of getting in and out and getting electricity back on. And they weathered all the storms. There was a tight knit group of friends.
Right.
So, things started happening with Mom. In 2019, I started going back and forth a little bit more. I was earning the air miles, so we would get free trips once in a while. From Philadelphia to Hilton, it was a straight flight. Go down on the weekends, help out, do what I could. And at this time, I was working in a call center, so I made sure I had weekends off. And she was getting a little bit unsteady, and she'd had a knee replacement. And December 30th at 2 a.m. in the morning, she falls in her bedroom, away from her phone, and breaks her hip.
Yeah.
And she crawls to the phone with a broken hip and calls 911, and they come in and get her. I get a call that afternoon on the 31st saying, "Hey, this is Dr. So-and-so. I want to let you know that the surgery went great. Your mom's doing phenomenal. The new hip is in. We've got her up and around." I'm like, excuse me. Mom fell? I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Nobody called me. Nobody. And I'm feeling a million miles away.
Yeah.
Now I'm saying it's time to get this team in action here. Let's figure it out. So I had a neighbor able to call me if there was ever an ambulance in the house. You know, we had this thing. We had life support set up with a button and the whole thing. And Mom was very stoic. Mom was very brave. And she never whimpered a word that she was in any pain. That's just the way she was. "I don't want to bother you guys. I'm fine." So one of the trips down, we had a conversation. And I said, "Look, we have some options here. We can pick up and come down here and live, or you can come with us and live, but we think you need support." She said, "Nope, I'm fine. I'm not leaving the house. I'm going to stay here, and this is where I want to go." all right, okay. And those were, that was the rules. That's what, and to have that conversation was not hard for us. It was a very easy, open conversation. What do you want to do? How do you want to handle things? And I will do whatever I can to make sure that happens for you. That's the important part. So it was, when she broke her hip, that was right during COVID. So you couldn't just go down. You know, they got her out of the hospital 3 days, and they got her over to a rehab center. Right. The rehab center said, we can have one family member, and that is it. One family member. So my cousin lived in Charleston, and he said, I'll go. I'm only a couple hours away. I can get down there, back and forth, like, you know, whatever we need. So I gave him medical power of attorney. We had everything signed. And by the way, make sure you have your forms set up. Medical power of attorney, wills, power of attorneys, all that stuff for everybody in the family when the time comes. Because it gets very messy if you don't. It just does.
Like, for like, what would happen? Because I know that that is something that everybody, and we, before we started rolling, I am talking to Gar about, you know, how, what is going through the mind of the listener, the layperson,
when
to these documents, and that when, they,
yeah. When mom fell, of course you have pain relievers, right? And you get a cloud sometimes, and you need that extra person there to help make decisions, to help make sure that you make the right decisions, that you just don't agree to something.
Right.
Sometimes if you agree to something, it's not what you want in the long run. So you need that extra person. And in South Carolina, everything had to be faxed back and forth. They couldn't do a phone call. Okay. So by having everything set up and ready to go, it was a phone call. And on the form, it said, mom makes decisions, but make sure I know about the decision. So if we need to say, hold the brakes for a second, let's make sure it's the right thing. We can do that.
Sure.
So we got cousin Neil in on this, and he would go back and forth, and she was there 5 weeks, I think it was. Now we're in February. So I had to take a few weeks off, and I went down and went into the place to go get her. And the funny part of the story is, well, Mr. Webb, you're not on the list. I said, wait a minute. I am the son. Now, Mr. Neil Kramer is the one that – I said, wait a minute. So once we got that straightened out, again, this was COVID, I was able to pick her up and take her home. And I got her home, and there's difficulty in mobility. Not in the attitude, not in anything else. She was phenomenal as a patient. But in the mobility, of course, with a broken hip, and we also had a case of cellulitis, and we also had a case of the lymph nodes not working. So her legs from her knee down were huge, Drew. They were bigger than her thighs.
Yeah.
And so the mobility and walking around, so we knew there were issues there. So the doctor said, okay, we need you to bring her back and forth into rehab and doctor's appointments and this and that. Now, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, I got to do something different. There's got to be something I can do. And I stumbled upon something called palliative care and hospice care. And I said, ooh, part of the team. So I interviewed a couple of palliative care and hospice organizations. And there was one that absolutely just impressed me. They were out of Buford, which was about a 50-mile drive into Hilton Head. But I had a social worker at my help. I had a PA. I had a nurse, PA, physician's assistant, right. A nurse, a doctor overseeing everything. And one of the things that happened to mom is she had had a couple of hospitalizations with kidney issues because the doctors weren't watching what was being prescribed and the pharmacist wasn't paying attention and they overprescribed medication. As people get older, bodies don't process things.
Sure.
It just happens. So one of the most empowering things I did was we hired this palliative care. Mom got very comfortable with these nice people very quick. They hit it off. They talked together as moms. They talked together as professionals. They talked together as having fun. They shared their stories. And I felt very good about this. And I was able to fire her doctors, and not in a literal sense saying, get out of here, but I need to put you guys on the sidelines. And I found a pharmacy that was a family-owned pharmacy that agreed to be mom's chemist.
Okay.
Let me watch the medication. you know, and information was shared between the pharmacy and the doctor of the palliative care, and they got a good baseline for her. And we never had the medication failure again. So that was part of the team that was there. And I got reports. We were able to get them in through Medicare. We were able to get palliative care in 3 times a week for nursing, once for PT, and once for OT. So I had 5 visits a week for mom, so she wasn't sitting by herself.
That's great.
So I was able to go back and forth. So now I'm getting this team together. The discussion came up is there's going to be a time when she can't be on her own. So my lovely wife, Debbie, and I are planning for me to go down and stay in Hilton Head and not work while Debbie's here keeping the wheels on the wagon. I can't tell you how important that was and how phenomenal Deb was making that happen. Absolutely phenomenal.
This is Professor Deb Webb up here, top left. And this is your mother. But let's give your mom a name. What's her? Nancy. Okay.
Nancy Webb. Aunt Nancy. And to my cousins, who, by the way, were calling mom. You know, they all, I would say that of my 9 cousins and their kids, they were calling mom 11, 12 times a week, one way or another. Somebody was calling, and they didn't get together and say, okay, you call on Tuesday. They just started calling because we put the word out there. And that was part of the family. Just a real quick side note, growing up, my mom had 4 sisters and 2 brothers, and they decided early on that the family would get together once a year and meet someplace, which was down at the Jersey Shore. So every year, we all got, no matter where we were, we all got together. And they kept that strong family unit that whole time.
That's awesome.
And we did that with Dad's family, too. So that was part of how this paid dividends later on in life. Huge.
Right. So where you're going with that, correct me if I'm wrong, is that this she's got a support system because of the way that she is and her the way her sister, her family is. They keep in touch. They maintain a strong family bond. So now you were at the end. Nancy finds herself at the end of her life, and she's got a lot of people that are paying that back, right, or paying it forward.
So here's the nugget. It was never the end of life for her. That never came up in the conversation that I'm done. What came up in the conversation was your cousin, you know, Brenda called, your cousin Donna called, your cousin Neil called. I got a visit from Neil and Donna out of Charleston. Kelly called Neil's daughter. It was always about life and what was going on with their life. There was never a conversation about end of life. That was the beauty of that whole thing. That was just a nugget. That was incredible.
Yeah. I mean, and that makes sense. I guess I'm just thinking even though that's not mentioned, it's the reality, right? And nobody, but she's got a support system that is sturdy because of the way she lived.
Yes.
Right.
So we have the family team. We've got the professional team, and now we've got the friends team. And one of the fun things that mom used to do is every once in a while she'd get together with the neighbors and they would come over to mom's house and they would have a wine and cheese party. It was usually about 5:30, and somebody would bring some cheeses over on a cutting board, charcuterie board, and the wine, and everybody had their favorite wine. So mom had that in the garage. One of the big 6-foot storage cabinets was nothing but wine of whose favorite wine was what.
Right.
A couple of boys drank bourbon, that whole thing. So I got a call from the nurse, and people were stopping by, and this was in November of 2021. And she said, Gar, it's time. You got to come down. Your mom is okay. So Deb and I are ready to go. And I went down December 11th, which was mom's birthday. I said, hi, I'm here. I'm staying. She goes, oh, and she's worried about me. What about work? What about Debbie? You know, what about the dog Getty? And she's worried about everything but her, which is where I get my service above self from in life. And I said, we got it. We're good. We're going to make it happen. And we went with palliative care, 5 visits, had to do the occasional doctor's visit once in a while to get them to sign off on palliative care because Medicare likes these checkups done. And we swung into hospice care in April of 2022. But as we were rounding the corner in 2021, going into New Year's, I said, we need to have these wine and cheese parties. So I made some calls to the friends and I said, do y'all want to come over like every night? You don't have to come over every night, but let's just have something happen every night. And almost every night, somebody would show up with wine and cheese and off we'd go before dinner. So she had that social support system. She had the calls from the family. The palliative care people were friends now. They were not medical people. And she had me there and she talked to Debbie every day. And so it was the attitude and it was the quality of care she was getting.
Where's the attitude? What is the attitude?
It's not the end of life. It's look at people talking to me. Look at people calling me. I'm able to solve some issues. I'm able to help people out. I'm able to talk stories. Her attitude. And which kept my attitude in a positive flow. Because there was times and around Christmas and New Year's, again, Debbie and I are not together because Debbie hadn't come down yet. She was still doing some training and working. I really felt that I was in over my head. And that's where my professional team came around because one of them was a social worker. And Lynn was phenomenal. And Lynn said, you got to take care of yourself. And I must have given her a blank stare. I said, huh? And she said, let's sit down. And she went over taking care of myself mentally, spiritually, and physically. Because how can you take care of mom if you're not taking care of yourself? You know, there's only so much time you can put in 24 hours a day. And then your body's going to say, okay, got to take a break.
Absolutely.
So that was some of the best advice that I have. So when Kathy, the PA, would come in, and Kathy was the reason why we stuck with these people. But when Kathy would come in or Lynn would come in, they would take my pulse, and not literally, but just take my pulse as to how you're doing, what's going on. Spend literally a couple hours with mom going over things and then check in on me. And it got to be comical where they would come in and say, hey, Gar. And then, hey, Nancy. And, of course, the fuss was over mom. And, hey, Nance, what do you say we kick Gar out of here? And they would make me go away. They would make me, for an hour, go out on a drive, go over to the sound where I took pictures of one of your homes of Paris Island.
Yeah, right
across. Send it over to you. And just go do something. Go out and watch the birds. Because they lived on the 14th fairway of a golf course, so I could go out there and watch the hackers, you know, shoot balls at me off the sidelines by the cart path.
Cool.
but to them, it became important that I got a breath of fresh air somehow.
Yeah.
Got out of the house. We had a cleaning lady and she was a young gal. And she also was a waitress at a restaurant, but she would bring in meals once in a while for mom. You know, she knew mom liked seafood. She knew, because they would talk about it all the time. She had worked with mom for years, and so she would bring stuff in. So all these people just stepping out of their roles in life and just having fun as friends was so important for the attitude and just made things easier to go along. I had a real estate lawyer down there, and I had an estate lawyer, and one of the other nuggets that I got was put everything in both names, joint tenant with rights of survivorship. I said, okay, because in South Carolina, going through a will takes a lot of months, takes a lot of time. So by being a joint tenant or ownership, I actually took over ownership of the car because of insurance. For a 90-year-old person in Hilton Head, insurance was three times as much as it was in my name in Pennsylvania.
Really?
Yeah, it was a huge number. And I said, let's just put this in our name and we'll put it on our insurance. And while it was more expensive on our current two cars because it was a Mercedes, it was a whole lot less expensive. So we found some ways to cut cost and to do things correctly. So again, here's the whole team working together. So we have the wine and cheese parties. We've got the family calling. We've got the wife calling, and she's keeping the wheels on the cart. There's a lot of things in motion, and when I felt overwhelmed, I was able to make phone calls to my social worker, to my wife, to my cousins. And then I had a couple of phenomenal friends that called me every morning. One guy lived in San Diego, and Brad was my best man at my wedding. Lou, I've been friends with since 1979, and on his way to work every morning at 7 o'clock, he would call me. We'd talk for 40 minutes while he was on his drive to work. And he would just check in, and we would talk about anything and everything. Again, taking kind of my pulse, where you at that day. And Lou was a friend that would say, I want to tell you something. I'm listening to you today. I need you to call somebody, call Lynn, call somebody. And we had that kind of relationship where I awesome. Could, yep, no problem. And nobody took offense to anything or, you know what, I'm having a tough day, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I get it. Go get a breath of fresh air. So there was a lot of activity around Mom. There was things happening. And this whole time, her attitude was, I'm not coming to Pennsylvania to live with you guys. It's just not going to happen. I'll be fine. Go back. Well, there's no need for the whole family to be down here. We're doing just fine. And on TV, we had cable TV. She was either watching the Food Channel or golf. Right. Nothing else. She didn't turn the news on. She didn't turn on the weather. Didn't care. That was my job. If there's something she needed to know, I could tell her. But if the golf was on, and what we found was golf over in Europe, which was not the LIV tour, it was a different tour. She was not happy with the LIV tour, but that's besides the point. And or the Food Channel. My mother was a gourmet cook. And one of the things that she did not want to do was to go into one of these residences and eat their food because it just didn't work for her. So it was up to me to pick up the gourmet part, cook with the wine, so my cooking skills got a little bit better.
Nice, nice. What was your favorite Food Network personality?
I love what Guy Fieri did with the Food Network and building the brand. I think he built the brand really well, and he's got a pretty good story in the background. But then you had, they're all phenomenal cooks, Antonio LaFazzo, Bobby Flay,
mm-hmm.
Rocco, Samuel, they're just some phenomenal cooks. And one of the things that struck me and one of my little nuggets was I have to spend more time with Open Arms, which again, service above self, I was able to do. Because if I have an opinion on a group of people I like or a group of politics or a group of something, I'm going to be losing out on somebody's celebration, somebody's food, somebody's interesting stories. And that's why I try and invite everybody into my life, for me, regardless of what my views are, just to share in something that I don't know about.
That's awesome. It's a way to be, man.
Yeah. So one of my cousin's phone calls, my cousin looks like my brother. I mean, people think we're brothers. Steve lives in Chestertown, Maryland, and his wife, Rose, is an RN. And we were going back and forth on medications, and she was thrilled with the way that they were taking care of Mom and the parameters they were using. And she said, look, when we get close to the time, I got to come down there because you're going to need help. You can't do this on your own. Because if Mom's bedridden, there's just a lot of things that you're not aware of. And I said, I'll take that help. So, again, in hospice, you don't have an expiration date. You don't know when. It can go a week. It can go a month. It can go 6 months. And sometimes it can go for a couple of years. You just don't know. It all depends on the patient and things that are going on. And, again, I'm not focusing on what was going on with Mom. I'm focusing on the attitude and the surroundings and things that made her quality of life so much better where she wasn't worried about what was happening to her. So we kind of got within a few days of hospital bedtime because Mom was pretty weak. Little things like going to the bathroom, eating, drinking. So Rose took a flight down. And that was probably one of the best decisions that we made, all of us as a family, was getting that help. And she dropped everything that she had and came down to help. And she wasn't working then, but she felt it very important to help out. And the last 2 weeks, as things progressed and Mom got weaker and weaker and really dependent on us to do everything, Rose would come up with ideas. We were having a wine and cheese party one night, and somebody brought barbecue. And Mom very weakly said, "Oh, it smells so good." And Rose said, "Well, do you want some?" And Mom said, "Yeah." And they're both looking at it like, how's she going to eat this barbecue? Because she can't get solid foods down. Rose goes in the kitchen, grabs me, and says, I need like the machine. I need a chopping machine. And we have one that chops nuts. And she purees this barbecue and makes it almost a soup. And, oh, Mom was just delighted with that. Such a good. And she was able to have that with a little bit of wine. And, you know, you got the eyedropper out and you had some wine. Yeah. And you had the barbecue. So there was just little innovative things that we were all able to come up with. And the friends would help out. And the other thing that happened for us was spiritually. When Dad passed, I was very impressed that they went to a Presbyterian church down there. And you'll like this story. There's a lot of neat people in South Carolina, in Hilton Head. You ever heard of the band Fish?
Oh, yeah.
The guy that plays the keyboards, Paige McConnell.
Okay.
His mom and dad live in Hilton Head and go to the church. And my mom and dad knew the McConnells very well. But Dr. McConnell was the one that kind of came up with the invention of Tylenol.
Oh, wow.
So there's, again, a lot of neat people in the circles here. I called the church and I said, is there a way that we could have somebody stop by and maybe do a communion in the house? And I want to say from February of 2022 until Mom passed in October, we had somebody there, Jan, who became a very dear friend, come out every week. And then the pastors would come out once a month and do a communion for Mom. So the church got very involved, which sometimes is tough to do wherever you live. But that was something that really struck home for me. That was spiritually one of the greatest things that happened with Mom. That was terrific.
It's outstanding, yeah.
So just everything in giving her the quality of life came together, and that's what this was about. And as we had this quality of life, all the other stuff, the paperwork, the decisions became much easier for us.
You know, one thing that you're sharing, Gar, makes me think about, you know, without knowing, just knowing you and just looking at that picture, knowing you and Deb and looking at that picture of Nancy up there. I've known, of course, I'm almost 50 years old. I've known some people that have passed from this earth and have wound up in rehabs and hospice and all that stuff. And you see it happen. You see it, you can kind of read the plays on it, see that it's coming. But one thing that I always notice is that the people who are giving the care are just fucking exhausted.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they're not very, it's even though maybe hospice, I don't know how much dealings that I've had to do with that. I know they got to be nurturing. They've got to be empathetic, sympathetic. But I think that it sounds like your mom was an extraordinary human being and spread a lot of love around, service above self. And then that was reciprocated, you know, at this particular mm-hmm. time. And if you've got all these friends or you got, and still having wine and cheeses, I mean, what a way to go out. Honestly, to have all this quality of life and all these people that you love and you're standing your ground in the home that you love and you spent, you know, however many years living in your beautiful place and you got all these people calling, and that's the way, that's ideal. And now a lot of people can't, now not hating on anybody, but there's a lot of people who they do not have that sort of quality of life. They're not that kind of a nurturing person. Maybe it's fear, maybe it's some sort of personality trait, but they're, especially as they get older, they might be inclined to kind of just move inward and not go out to play shuffleboard or go have wine and cheeses. And it's those people that I wonder, you know, that that the end of their lives can be very sad, you know? And I don't know if there's anything to do about it. To me, like, there's the lesson is like, you need to be a nurturing, loving person who has, I mean, Nancy sounds like somebody who's done everything she ever wanted to do.
We had great stories before the funeral, and we shared those stories. You know, we shared stories that Cousin Sue, and this was 1963. Cousin Sue was a teenager at the time, and she and her friend had gone and gotten babysitting money and were working like crazy to get somebody to chaperone them to a show they wanted to go to. And her mom said no, because she was in the process of five kids. And they ended up calling Aunt Nancy and they said, hey, and we lived in Washington, D.C. at the time. And Sue was in Philadelphia, Lawrence Park, as a matter of fact. And they said, Aunt Nancy, we want to go do this thing. Can you go with us? And Mom said, I'll be right there. We'll go do it. So Dad and I and Mom packed up the car in D.C. and we went up. And Sue and her dear friend and Mom got on a train, went to Shea Stadium and saw the Beatles. So Mom saw the Beatles when they stepped foot in Shea Stadium.
That's awesome.
And the deal from Aunt Kay was you got to pay for Aunt Nancy's ticket. That's the only way that this is going to work. And they did. So they saw the Beatles. I was just a young tyke. Being a baby of the 50s, kindergarten class got to go to tour the White House, and Mom met President Kennedy. And I got to meet President Kennedy as we were on a tour, and he was just walking through the halls and stopped and said hi to everybody.
Wow.
We had Mom stories like that all through the time. So when you got to the funeral, and what some people would view as a very sad occasion, we'd already heard the stories. We'd already laughed at the things that had happened. We already had the goofball things and the mystery moments. And when Pierre and Jeanine, Pierre was the president of Peugeot in the United States, but they became good friends with Mom and Dad and took Mom and Dad to Paris. And the French drive a little bit differently here than you do in the United States. So Pierre was driving, Dad was in the front seat, and the two girls were in the back. And my mother said, the funniest thing I ever heard was your dad yelling, Rouge, Rouge, Pierre Rouge, which means red light. And he would sail right through these lights because that's how they drive over there.
Yeah.
And the whole trip when there was not anything about this is this castle, this is this farmland, this is this winery. It was Rouge, Rouge. So that became the name of the trip. So there again, all these wonderful stories. So when the time came, I was actually holding Mom's hand. And as she had done with Dad, I said, it's okay to let go. You know, it's time. And that was it. It was very peaceful for us. And the funeral home I had contracted with, two young gals stopped by. And one gal was turning 40 years old that day. And they came in and I'm telling them the Beatles story. I'm telling them, you know, a couple things about Mom. And they're just laughing. She says, usually when we come to pick somebody up, it's tough. Now, hospice had to be there to pronounce Mom had passed. So Kathy was there also. Kathy started with Mom, Kathy ended with Mom. And the gal says, is there any kind of music your mom listens to? And I said, you have a CD player in your little vehicle there? And she goes, yep. So I went and got a Frank Sinatra CD because she had a couple pictures signed by Frank Sinatra. I was actually a bodyguard for Frank Sinatra for 48 hours back in the 70s when I worked at a music theater in Michigan.
Wow.
And there was a team of us that you know, were helping out the real bodyguards for Mr. Sinatra. But he was very sweet and very nice to us. But I said, here's a CD, and I'll come pick it up. And so they just had a ball singing Frank Sinatra songs, you know, taking Mom away. And so we were sad, but there was always great nuggets that came about this. And in the process, I was able to heal myself. And as you know, I have now put together my team of doctors when I turned 65 last August. I've been able to put together my team. And you know how hard I'm working on bettering my physical self.
Mm-hmm.
and taking breaths of fresh air. You know, Debbie and I have a deal, and our deal is, if somebody needs to go out and go do something, you go get your breath of fresh air, and there's no questions asked. You just go do it. But the beautiful thing about Debbie and I is a lot of times my breath of fresh air includes her.
Yeah, she is a breath of fresh air. She's freaking awesome, man.
Yep.
Living one's best life, you know, I think about that. You know, Gar, there's been, over the last couple of weeks, I've lost several people mm-hmm. that were not at, you know, not 80, 90
no.
years of age. They were some real good people who kind of went before their time, so to speak. And when that happens, it's one of these moments, almost like a 9/11 moment, right? Where you're like, wait a second, none of this shit is guaranteed. What am I whining? What am I sweating the small shit about? What am I losing my patience in traffic or getting pissed off about something at the office? Or, you know, why would I ever hang my head about some stupid small shit when this person who was 40 or 50 years of age, you know, is gone like that? And so we really don't have, the conclusion that I make is that we really don't have, tomorrow is not guaranteed. Everybody's mother said that. Nancy, I'm sure, said, hey, Gar, don't listen. Tomorrow's not guaranteed. You know, stop crying in your in your soup there, Gar, wherever the recommendation would be. But
well, we really, as everybody, we came through some tough times, and Mom was always, how can I help you? Do you need to talk? Do you need a check? What do you need? And Mom was never about money. I mean, money, they worked hard and they had enough to get by, but there was never, you know, a large bank account. So it was never about money. But, you know, if a $500 can help you, if something can help you, what do you need? There was never a barrier of don't talk to me about it. That's just how our family kind of set themselves up. And that's how we've set ourselves up. Listen, I've had a nephew pass at 32 years old with a son and a wife, and talk about shocked. So again, I don't put barriers up socially or physically. I invite all comers. There's an open door. There's a table. We'll put food on it. You know, you want a wine, you want bourbon, you want a glass of water, you need a shower, whatever you need. Let's sit down and chat and share life.
Yeah.
And that's the nugget I got out of this whole thing. And from settling Mom's affairs when she passed to now, again, it's about the good friends on my team. It's about the people that will tell me the truth on my team. My mirrors, if you will. It's about people like you and your lovely wife and kids and family and all the wonderful things you bring into our lives, from wood carving to motivational and these podcasts. I just love these podcasts. They're just, again, these nuggets mean so much to somebody somewhere, and you may never know it. You may never know it. And you're doing a service above self and probably don't even realize it.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. Celebrate the people in your life, you know, is something that I really enjoy doing. We all are fortunate to have some wonderful people in our life. We don't have to be, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts and I see the guests and the conversations that are had. And I'm most interested in talking about the normal folks that are in my life and the extraordinary experiences they have and what can be taken away from that, and literally honoring, you know, the stories folks have to tell. So that's my nugget. That's my conclusion of this, is like, live your best life now and set yourself up so that whenever it is we pass from this world, we can do it gracefully and knowing that we helped other people and thereby helped ourselves. It clearly came back full circle for the webs.
And it's still coming around. I still text happy birthday to Lynn and Kathy down in South Carolina, who were part of the team. the hospice team, the pastor, our friend. We message each other back and forth. They love the Chippentales files on Facebook. And during this time, I reached out and was reached out to by people in my high school youth group back in the 70s. And I reconnected through Facebook with like six or seven of those people that were there during this time. That was the beautiful thing about social media, regardless of all the other things you hear about. That was phenomenal. So it's amazing the doors that you walk through in life, and then every once in a while you just turn around and take a look, and there's still some beautiful things that happen.
Yeah,
there really are.
It would be great if you could kind of model this. Well, have you thought about putting something together where you can help mentor and otherwise guide people who are entering hospice, or families that are loved one is entering hospice? And so you could set up the ideal components to them, almost like, well, this is what we did. You know, you guys can, I don't know, you gently break it to them. Look, you can hang your head and everybody go moping around, or you can, you know, think about the impact that this, your loved one has made on the world and your life, and celebrate them. I think that, you know, when I go back to that, my earlier mention of, there's a class that I took in my undergraduate, death and dying, on death and dying. And books have been written on this topic. And of course, it's a very uncomfortable topic to breach. Nobody wants to talk about this sort of thing. But we are really very reactionary to it. I mean, nobody wants to leave, especially, you know, prior to, you know, hopefully we live long. And I had an old boss that said, I want to live long and die fast. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great ambition, actually. Live long, live my best possible life, make a positive impact on this world, and then die fast, not suffering. Now, that's not always possible, but it would be cool if you could pay this forward, your experience, and you're doing it right now by telling the story, and I appreciate your sharing. But I think that it would be a new paradigm, a paradigm shift away from the dark and dreary, you know, fearfulness around death and dying, and reframe it into a celebration of, look who this person was, look at the impact that Nancy had on you and all the other people in her midst, look who, as her genetic, as her offspring, look about the, you know, I call you service above self for a reason, because you're a good fucking guy, you know, and you're always looking to help other people. So that's a good way to be. And that's a pearl that I will extract from this.
So the pearl is already multiplied on three different occasions while I've been home here.
How so?
And a friend that I'm across the political aisle with, as you know, I serve as judge of elections and township auditor, but somebody from the opposite party, who I actually used to work for, his father got to be in very bad shape. So we share my stories. And I said, here's a guide. This is what I went through. These were the pitfalls. These were the things I looked for. And it helped their family come together, because they were all, he had a sister, and again, our age, and their mom is up in years. And they were having discussions that weren't going well. They weren't productive. And after I shared my story, they were able to get together, get a hospice team in out of Bluebell. And their father had a very quiet, peaceful, and quality passing. And they came to terms with what was happening. And we would text, Jeff and I would text back and forth two or three times a week. Hey, Jeff, how you doing? Hey, dude, yeah, I'm doing fine. Or he would text me, want to talk to you about something. So that was one family. And there's been two other families that have had the same experience telling the story. And they've taken what nuggets or pearls of wisdom, if you will, and have applied them to their cases, and it's been helpful. Now, my story is not going to go to everybody, but maybe there's something in the story that can be helpful.
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
So, you know, it's like all of us, man. Everybody's got something we can take out of their story and just run with it.
No, absolutely. And our our little soundtrack intro, Time Stands Still.
Yeah.
I don't know what Neil Peart and Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson were, you know, whoever wrote that song, probably Neil Peart. He was the author, right? He was the songwriter.
Lyricist. He was a lyricist.
Yeah.
He was a tremendous reader.
And that's a tremendous, yeah. And that's a tremendous song. Time Stands Still. Something this moment a little bit longer.
Yeah, so Neil Peart was a lyricist on that, as he was on most of the songs. There's Amy Mann.
Yeah, she's great. Freeze this moment a little bit longer. Make each sensation a little bit stronger. Make each impression a little bit stronger. Innocence slips away. Time stands still.
Yeah, and I listen to the lyrics and I keep thinking about, like, you and I are having a discussion, and how can I embrace your words and let you know how much they mean? And that's how I always listen to that song.
No, it's a tremendous,
I'm staying still.
Yeah. And then, you know, here Gar, to the viewer, Gar and I, I'm like, my standard routine now when I produce a podcast is I create an outline, which is about the thoughts that and the conversations we've had previously with, mm-hmm. with an individual and about a given topic. And Gar and I have been talking for months and probably a year. Years maybe about the notion of doing this, and I was kicking the tires of this podcast and swearing that I'm going to step my game up and do it. And I'm finally doing it. But part of the process is what kind of intro music? And Gar said, "Well, whatever you like." No, man, I want to hear what's something that speaks to you about the topic. And so he just kind of blurted out "Time Stands Still" by Rush, and it really is a tremendous song. And that speaks to our topic here. Time stands still. Think about, you know, like I would see your post, Gar, you standing on the shore, you know, yeah. Taking a picture out into
taking
the
taking a breath of air.
What's that?
Taking a breath of air.
Taking a breath of air, looking out onto the South Carolina, the sound between Hilton Head and Parris Island, South Carolina. And of course, I'm thinking about the activities going on Parris Island, but I'm also imagining my friend standing on the banks of a waterway. And I'm wondering what you're thinking. And I'm proud of you for, I knew that you were down there doing this, and I would look for the updates and all these things. And I know that it was a tremendously difficult thing to do. You know, you got to uproot yourself. You got to leave your wife. You're driving and flying back and forth. I'm sure it was a very tumultuous, scary, painful time for you. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the beauty that came out of it, and that was made possible by what the values that Nancy embodied and you embody, and how that was. People pick up on that shit. Like, you know, being in chiropractic, I'm literally plugged into people, right? So I'm working on their physical body, and we're having good conversations.
Yep.
And I can pick up on that energy. And so that's what I'm thinking when I look at Nancy up there and the photos you shared and the stories that you've recounted. I'm imagining a woman who really lived a really good life and was never refrained from loving and caring and supporting the people in her life. And that's why people supported her, you know, towards the end of her life. And, And so that's what
she took care of others. And she, again, there was just stories that embraced life. You know, my cousin Neil in Charleston, his daughter was becoming a physician's assistant, was doing her internship, and one of the internships was in Hilton Head at the hospital. And Neil came up to me and said, "Do you think your mom would be okay if Kelly stayed with your mom?" I said, "Yeah, I think so." And we talked about it. Mom said, "All right." So Neil dropped a little hint in her ear and said, "When Kelly gets there, you have to ask her if she wants to go out in the pub crawl." And mom said, "What's a pub crawl?" "Well, you know, you go to different bars and things." She goes, "Well, I'll take care of that." So the first night Kelly's there, she comes in, you know, she gets situated. She's already been to class. And she sits down, and apparently my mother looked at her and said, "Well, we got some time. You want to go in a pub crawl?" And Kelly fell off the couch. She couldn't believe that my mom was that hip. and learned the story that this was, you know, as she started with her Aunt Sue, took her to the Beatles concert, she was going to take care of her. And for 6 months, they had a ball. I think it was 6 months. They had a ball. You know, they would read stories. They would talk to each other. And there was just never a moment where it was uncomfortable. From what I understand, they had a great time.
Yeah.
So when mom passed, one of the things I gifted to all the gals in the family was mom's jewelry, earrings and all that stuff. And my cousin Nancy's passing, that happened not too long ago, everybody was wearing a piece of mom's jewelry when they came to Nancy's service, which spoke to me. Nobody, you know, they said things to me, but I noticed what was what. And that said volumes to me about what family is in our family.
Yeah.
So that was just, you know, just really cool. Cool stuff.
It's very special. And that's what it can be. That's what it can be. Now, of course, we can all think about
so families. Long story short to you, as you're talking about my breath of fresh air, not to interrupt you, which I just did, but when I went out to the point and sent you these pictures, sometimes there was a shrimp boat shrimping. Sometimes there was a sailboat going by. But I was just embracing life. And regardless of how in over my head I was, I had the attitude of just embracing life and taking back a story, no matter the situation, which you taught me overcoming objectives in your motivation and your Zero Dark 30 classes way back when, when I could actually move.
You can still move, my friend.
We're getting there.
Moving and grooving. You are, you know, and then one of the things that I'm also pondering is that the people like your mom establish a precedent, a standard for living. And so everything, when you know somebody like that, it makes you want to live and be a better person yourself for them, in honor of them. It's like, you know, the Marine Corps philosophy is like, you know, Nancy is our commander and she's charging a hill and leading the way, leadership by example. And then, you know, Nancy falls, we pick up the fucking guidon, you know, we pick up the flag and we charge the hill, you know, in honor of them following in their footsteps. And so I think that that's a great, when I think about all the people in my life, you, Deb, Nancy, whom I never met, but I kind of have because I know and love you guys. Mm-hmm. So a collection of individuals that we all have, people that are in our lives that show us every day love and kindness and leadership, you know, different a way to live. And if you know, you can look at that and say, okay, well, I'm going to be like freaking Eeyore moping around. Yeah. Shit. But hopefully it inspires us to live a better life. You know what I mean? So anyway, so this has our conversation has. In closing, Gar, with all that we've talked about in consideration, since this is the Making Motivation podcast, what motivates you about this entire experience and about life in general?
My whole life came very clear to me during this experience of palliative care and hospice care and taking care of mom. There are things in life that I don't do well but I've been taught to focus on the things I do well, however small they are, and build on them and work with them. And like everybody else, I can be just a train wreck emotionally. Absolutely can. But then I have to find a way, and sometimes it's a kind word from you or from somebody or something, or Chip the dog. It there's some action that helps me get through it. I think we all go through our times where things just aren't working. We're not in sync. It's not smooth. And you have to take a step back. And my first question is, what do you do well? This isn't working for you. I was never a good student, but I found other things I was good at growing up. And I've just applied that my whole life and my service to my community. There are things, I don't think the same way other people think, but the way I think brings an added dimension to a project, brings a thought process to a conversation you and I are having today. And you're the same way. You know, it's your past experiences that there just may be a word, a nugget, a sentence, something that could really just make somebody smile, change their day, or help them move forward instead of taking three steps back. And that's what came out of this experience, because I was in over my head, but I had Lynn and Kathy and just all these wonderful people around me that said, yeah, it's not working, but let's try this, or let's do this, or go outside and just breathe the air and don't think about anything. Or go talk to the bird at the birdhouse. Just go do something and get out of the house. Or let's have a conversation with Mom, because we have to have that conversation now. And Lynn was brilliant to that. Lynn could have Mom take a look at somebody else's point of view. So I guess this whole experience, just to sum this up in that chat, is that be able to open your arms and your mind and embrace a different point of view from everybody, because you just never know what point of life they've been through and what piece of knowledge they can give you to focus on something positive to help you move forward and not only enhance your life, but maybe enhance other people's lives around you.
Yeah. Very well said. On that note, my brother, I appreciate your time. This is a very informative and fun conversation. I enjoyed it very much, and I learned quite a bit as well. And going into Monday, it looks like maybe a little cloud cover coming in, but it ain't going to take us off our mission. It's a beautiful day. It's going to be 70-something degrees all week. Look at this background with this conversation in mind. The background of wildflowers, cosmos, I put that on. Very positive life, you know, blue skies, a little bit of clouds intermittent there. We got a beautiful photo of Nancy Webb and Deb Webb and again, my good friend Gar Webb having a conversation. You're more than just a guy, my brother. You're more than just a guy. Love and respect, my man. You have a great day. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
You go home and give that lovely wife and kids a big hug today and make sure Bogey gets a good run in, all right?
Oh, he's definitely going to get a good run. Thanks, brother.
I'll talk to you. Thanks.